the Antiwhite system and tune in to the Pro-White system at RadioArian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 28th of October 2019. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioArian.com. Well, I am very sad to say that we appear to have lost another young white woman in the third world. You would think they would learn from the news stories that we've had over the past few years. I mean, we had that Swedish girl that went backpacking in Morocco and ended up being raped and beheaded. We've had a German student go out to Thailand. She ended up being raped and killed. That's just two that I can think of off the top of my head. And yet still, these young women appear to be going abroad unaccompanied without a care in the world for their own safety. They seem to think that they should be safe. They should be safe everywhere, but they're not safe everywhere, particularly not in the third world. If they're seen to be in a susceptible state, if they're seen to be drunk or under the influence of drugs or just on their own, it is so much more likely that they are going to be attacked than in white countries. In white countries, if you're not in a multicultural city, that is. Hopefully, this young British lady, she will turn up. But that is starting to look doubtful now. The British backpacker missing for 4 days has been pictured around a campfire just hours before she disappeared, as her worried family jet to Cambodia to join the hunt for the gap year student. And in the picture, she appears to be with other white people. So it looks like she left them at some point on her own. What is she doing walking around on her own in Cambodia? Amelia Bambridge, 21, was last seen at a beach party late on Wednesday night on the Cambodian island of Koh Rong. So she could have been under the influence of drink. She could have been under the influence of drugs. It was late at night. And these rural areas in the third world, I mean, they've always been the most dangerous areas. I mean, even when you look back at the Egyptian Book of the Dead, it talks about the places outside of the towns as being bandit areas, areas where the bandits are, where people will be attacked and robbed and raped. I mean, nowadays, it's more likely to happen in the multicultural cities. But if you're in the third world and you're off in a fairly remote area, there is a much greater chance of you being attacked, particularly if you are white. Police divers and drones scoured a paradise island in Southeast Asia yesterday in the search for the backpacker. Last night, footage of the gap year student taken hours before she vanished was released by her family in a desperate attempt to help find her. I mean, it must be absolutely heartbreaking for this family. They've flown out there to try and help look for her. But why wasn't her brother there with her? Why wasn't there a male there with her? It appears that she was there with just another girlfriend. How could the family allow this girl to go off unaccompanied to a place like Cambodia? Amelia, who saved for the trip for 2 years by working at Lloyds Bank, set off on September the 27th and flew first to Vietnam. Instead of looking at her life and thinking, I want to be a wife and a mother, she thought she wanted to have a career. She thought she wanted to go abroad and see the world and do the sort of things that men can do. But she's not a man. She's vulnerable. She's a white woman traveling on her own into the third world in the face of all these reports of white women being raped and killed in the third world. I mean, recently there was even a piece in The Guardian that was encouraging single white women to go backpacking in Pakistan, of all places. Pakistan, the country where the majority of the gang rapists in Britain originate from. You know, the mainstream media has a lot to blame for these instances of these white women going off to these third world countries, because they're encouraged to do that by this left-wing media and they get attacked once they get there. Searchers have questioned why the young woman would have walked away from the beach in the early hours, leaving her small urban outfitter's pack, which was found yesterday, on coastal rocks, containing her phone, charger, headphones, credit cards, watch, lighter, pen, and keyring. I mean, that is very suspicious. I mean, she could have dropped that because she was attacked. She may have put all her stuff down there so that she could go for a swim, but in which case you would expect to have found some of her clothes there as well. The fact that she's left all her important belongings there tends to say that she's been abducted, she's been attacked. But the family are keeping up their hope. But that is the first thing that you would think of if a white woman is on her own in the third world. I mean, anybody that's thinking of going over there that's female, they really should do all they can to prevent them from doing so, or encourage them to have a male chaperone with them. It's just common sense going into these places. And it's not long since they had cannibalism there. And a lot of these places, they've never even had a tradition of marriage. Women were just seen as property. And this next news story that I've got here, again, it's from the third world. It's from a bit of a different part of the third world. It's from Papua New Guinea. But it gives us an idea of what some of these places are like and what these people are like. In 2019, a 6-year-old boy who was condemned to death by his cannibalistic tribe because they thought he was a witch after his parents died, has returned to the jungle to reunite with the people who planned to eat him. It's just said so matter-of-factly, isn't it? As if this is just quite a normal thing that goes on. People just eat one another. I mean, we did the program on Captain Cook a while back with Max Musson talking about these cannibals and these tradition that they have in New Zealand, just of eating people. And you have the same in Papua New Guinea. I mean, these are savages. Basically, they're still at the stage of being cavemen, and this is the sort of thing that they do, and yet white people will still go there on holiday, thinking it's safe. Wawa Chombongi grew up in the Korowai tribe in West Papua, where villagers believe bad spirits are to blame when a person suddenly dies. The clan traditionally hunt the person they believe is responsible for an unexpected death, before killing them and eating their flesh for the perceived crime. You see, these peoples, they don't have a developed system of justice or law. They just have superstitions and a desire for revenge. And yet we think that when they come to our countries, they magically become Europeans once they set foot on the soil, and they're expected to understand our system of law and our system of justice. And they don't. They just don't think in those ways. When both Wawa's parents died in 2006, they believed it was because he was a witch and began planning his gruesome death. I mean, can you imagine that with white people, that parents would die? So you've got orphans there. So what you do is you kill and eat the orphans. You know, white people will see an orphan and they will want to help. They will want to show charity. It's a big thing about Christianity is helping the widows and the orphans and the people that can't look after themselves. But these non-white tribes, or this tribe in particular in Papua New Guinea, they don't have sympathy for an orphan. They look at the orphan as tonight's meal. Cornelius Sembring, a former guide in the region for Channel 7, heard of Wawa's plight and rescued the child, taking him into his home in Sumatra 13 years ago. Anything about that as well? Sumatra, I mean, that was part of the Dutch colonies, the Dutch colonial experiment. So they've had civilization for a good 200-300 years now, and yet they've still got cannibals there. Wawa is now 20 and still living with Mr. Sembiring and his family, thankful for his second chance at life. Now the Sports Science University student returned to his former tribe, saying he wanted to tell his people that they shouldn't kill and eat one another. I mean, you'd think that would just be very simple, wouldn't it? That killing and eating people is wrong, but they don't understand right and wrong. They don't have the sense of the law written in their hearts, basically. And Christianity teaches us that the white man has the law written in his heart. These other races, they don't have the law written in their heart, otherwise they wouldn't be going out killing and eating one another. And what do they mean by sports science university student? Is he a soccer player or something, I guess? Wawa went into the jungle with his foster brothers and sister Wilhelmus, Devi and Lepina for the emotional reunion last week. The devout Christian shook hands with the tribe's leader before his aunts embraced him and lamented the lost years with their nephew. Well, I don't think he can be a Christian, because he doesn't understand right and wrong and the law and everything else. He's not capable in thinking that way because his people never came up with a system for that. So obviously it might benefit him to obey Christian law in the same way that it benefits somebody to look right and look left before they cross the road. But it doesn't mean that he's going to understand all the intricacies of Christianity and the reason for it and the reason for sacrificing for others, mercy and charity and the system of law and justice that Christianity brings. And what are these missionaries doing trying to convert these other races to Christianity? It's a smear on Christianity to think that these other races are able to understand it, that it was intended for them. Wawa, who speaks no English, was overwhelmed with the greeting. He broke down in tears while Mr. Sembiring spoke for him. Interesting, he doesn't even speak any English. I mean, he's been adopted all this time. He's apparently a student at university, but he speaks no English. I wonder what his IQ is. But despite the warm welcome, Wawa eventually confronted his Korowai family about what happened to his uncle, who was killed due to an affair with another man's wife. We should talk and discuss in a nice way to get a solution. Why do you kill like that? Don't we have a solution, like talking to the other people or talking to the leader of society? He asked. As if this has never occurred to them before. Well, maybe we should actually talk about this before we kill and eat the orphans or murder someone. And you could say that killing this guy for having an affair with another man's wife, maybe that was justified. It was probably the other man that killed him. Wawa's parents died when he was young, leading the villagers to believe that he was a bad spirit. His brother Devi is also believed to be a sorcerer and faces a similar threat. Wawa wanted to bring his younger brother home with him, but was unable to do so this time around. He was told Devi would be safe if he obeyed the terms of his exile. I wonder why he wasn't able to bring his brother back with him into the adopted home. Obviously, the adopted home were wary of bringing back another cannibal with them. I mean, when we were talking about Captain Cook and his adventures in New Zealand, there was a quote that I read out about one of these Maoris that came back to Britain. And this was in the 20th century. This was in 1900 and something. And he was saying that what he really missed from New Zealand were the cannibal feasts. That's what he really missed. If there was anything that he could have, which he didn't actually have in Britain, it would be the cannibal feasts. He missed the cannibal feasts. These people are not like us. They're nothing like us. They should be just left alone to develop at their own pace. I mean, I don't know how much of a holiday destination Papua New Guinea is, but I'm sure there will be crazy white women that go over there and think that they'll be perfectly safe, the same as this white woman that went over to Cambodia thinking she was going to be completely safe. Part of this is because women have been taught to not see themselves as women, to see themselves as just being the same as men, when they're not the same as men. Women were created to have children and to raise children. And raising children is possibly the most important career that there is raising a child. And it's the most fulfilling career that a woman could ever have. And yet they've been conned into thinking that they should be serving their boss instead of serving their husband, who loves them. It's actually got so bad now in Britain that 75% of mothers are now working instead of raising children. The era of the single breadwinner, able to support his household on a family wage, appears to be truly over in Britain, with the Office for National Statistics figures indicating that over 75% of mothers now have to work. That's what feminism has done. 100 years ago, the man of the house went to work, and he earned enough money to pay for his wife and mother, and the mother of his children to stay there at home. And the mother would have 5 to 10 children. And that single breadwinner would bring home enough money to support that entire household. And the wife would do the washing, and she would keep the house spotless, and she would have her husband's dinner ready for him when he came home from work. She would make life as easy as possible for the husband, because she knew that he was out at work bringing home all the money that was needed to keep the household going. So you had a symbiotic relationship there. You had the father that was going out to work, bringing home the resources, and you had the wife that was there at home, taking care of all the things that normally, if a man was on his own, he would have to do when he got home from work, so that he had a nice break when he got home. And she would have a nice break when she got home, because she would have done all the things that needed to be done, basically, for both of them. And she would have the chance to study while she was at home. She would be expected to educate the children. While she was educating the children, she would also be educating herself, and she didn't have to work, and she was safe, and she was protected. Now the mothers have to go out to work because there isn't enough money paid out in a single wage. Both the parents have to work. The children are deprived of their mother. They're deprived of seeing their mother all the time and the love that only a mother can give. And they're palmed off on the state to the state child carers. That even if they're nice people and they're not horrible to the children, their time with that child is going to be split between 20 children that are all there in the nursery. So the child is only going to get the 1/20th of the attention that he would be getting from his own mother. That's before all the brainwashing that goes on with these young kids at the hands of the state. The number of mothers in the labour market has grown substantially over the last 20 years, the ONS Bulletin explains, with the number of women with dependent children in the workplace from an already high 66.2% in 2000 to 75% by April to June 2019. It's going to be 9 out of 10 in another 10 years, isn't it? 9 out of 10. Those poor, deprived children that are not getting that time with their mother that they should be getting. And of course, that means that when the mother gets home, all that work is still needing to be done. All that work that she would have been able to do before in the time that she spent at home with the husband doing the work. And don't forget, the husband would give his wages to his wife as the housekeeping money. She could do whatever she wanted at home. She could decorate the home exactly how she liked. That was the housewife's realm, was within the home. And the man's domain was outside the home, where the woman would have been at risk if she was out on her own. Because women are pretty much defenseless when it comes to aggression, because they have a third less body strength than us. So the man and the woman now come home and that work hasn't been done, and that causes friction. That causes friction between the husband and the wife because they're stressed out. They're trying to do two jobs. They're trying to raise children and they're trying to work. And it's just not possible to get all these things done. So they end up getting into debt where they're having to buy takeaway food and pre-processed food because they haven't got the time to cook it when they get home. And all that stress upsets the children. And a lot of the time it leads to a divorce. You can't go against natural law and expect there to be no consequences for it. Natural law is there to prevent these awful consequences from happening. If you go against the moral law, you go against the natural order of mothers raising children, there are going to be catastrophic consequences. The mothers aren't going to be happy, the fathers aren't going to be happy, and the children aren't going to be happy. The 25% of mothers that don't go into work, their children will be the happiest children. In 2019, 3/4 of mothers with dependent children were in work, up from 2/3 of mothers at the start of the century, confirmed Tim Vizard of the Office for National Statistics, Policy, Evidence and Analysis Team in the statistician's comment accompanying the report. As I say, at the turn of last century, no mothers were needing to work. And this is the thing, they say, oh, it's a great thing that these mothers are in work. Well, no, it's not. There's a need, they need to be in work now. They didn't used to. They didn't have to need to work. They could choose to work. Now, they have to work because there isn't enough money from a single breadwinner. Fewer than 3 in 10, 28.5% of mothers chose even to reduce their working hours after having children, although it seems likely that many more of them felt such a choice was not even open to them for financial reasons. That's the point. That's what this is about. I bet a lot of these mothers would rather not be working, but they have to now. They have to because they supported feminism and they brought women into the workplace, which doubled the human resources in the workplace and halved the wages. Full-time motherhood may have collapsed partly because it is strongly disincentivized in the British tax system. Stay-at-home mums cannot transfer their income tax-free personal allowance to their partner, and the only state support they receive is a limited amount of free or subsidized childcare, standard child benefit payments for their first two children, and national insurance credits until their youngest child turns 12. So it penalises white people with one partner, but when you've got these Muslims with half a dozen wives, they get benefits for each one of those children, each one of those wives. Britons need 35 full years of national insurance credits to receive the maximum state pension of £168 per week once they reach the state pension age, currently 66. So if they stay at home to bring their children up, they don't even get a full pension. They're not even rewarded for doing that with a full pension. Working mothers, on the other hand, can be rewarded for their lifestyle with tax credits on top of their personal allowance and child benefit payments and many more hours of free or subsidised childcare. It's as if the state doesn't realise that children are far better off having their mother at home, something that should just be common sense to everyone, that a child is better off with its mother than with anybody else. And yet they are incentivizing mothers to go to work and palm their children off on other people. The British approach contrasts strongly with that of more traditionally conservative governments in countries like Hungary and Poland, which are actively promoting motherhood. Well, that sounds very Nazi to me. Actively promoting motherhood. They must be white supremacists. In large part to arrest the collapsing birth rates, which other Western countries are trying to tackle through mass immigration. Through support measures including special home and family car loans and maternal pensions, to show gratitude and respect to mothers and grandmothers who have devoted their lives to bringing up children. So Hungary and Poland have got it right. They understand that you can't replace Hungarians and Poles with Negroes from Africa and Muslims from Syria. They are not going to be able to do the same things that Hungarians and Poles are. And what about your loyalty to your own people? Where's the loyalty to the people that built Britain? The government should have loyalty to the people that built this country, that built the empire, and do all they can to look after the children of the people that built it, the descendants of the people that built Britain. Instead, they're trying to replace them, and they're penalising the mothers for having the children. Europe is at a crossroads. Western Europe seeks to address the problem of demography with simple solutions, which only offer short-term success, but convey catastrophic consequences in the long run, a spokesman for the Hungarian government told Breitbart London in June 2019. What short-term success is there? The only success that they have is with is if their goal is to have a certain number of people in the country. That's the only success. They might have a certain number of people in the country, but they're a drain on the resources. All they are doing is draining the resources of the country. Then they're not making wealth for the country. If they are out there working, they'll be sending all that wealth back to their own country and just draining the health service, taking up the places in the schools. The only short-term success there is from replacement-level migration is in getting the numbers up of the people in the country. And why would you want to have so many people in the country anyway? The number of people we have in Britain far outweighs our carrying capacity of actually growing our own food. You should never have more people in a country than you can actually provide enough for from your own resources. That's just absolute madness. It means you are relying on resources from somebody else, which is just a recipe for failure, isn't it? It means other people have leverage over you. Hungary has a long-term approach and opts for the more difficult path, encouraging births by placing the interests of families in the focus of politics, rather than ever further flows of migration. And this isn't just so that we can produce more white babies. What we need is white babies being brought up in loving homes. We need white babies being brought up by their blood relatives. We need mothers that serve their husbands, that look after the home while they are out at work. But now that this has happened, now that they've allowed women into the workforce, we can't really go back. We can't really go back in time. And this is the end result of this feminism, is the halving of the wages, so that one breadwinner can no longer bring in enough resources to keep the family going. You should never have allowed feminism. People only look at the short-term results of things. They never look at the long-term consequences of what's happening. You might be able to disobey the natural law for a short while, but in the long run, you're just setting up a catastrophe. And that's in everything, from gay marriage to divorce to abortion. We seem to be a very short-sighted people. And if we only went along with our traditions, we would not have all these problems. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow, hopefully, with Mr. I. God bless and hail victory.
You're tuned in.